And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. You know, I've written a new book. You may have seen it. I hope you have. Hope you got a copy of it. It's an important book. It's entitled The Holy Serpent of the Jews. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about that book, but we have a lot more to discuss today. In fact, I think you're going to want to order the CD or the audio tape of this program, which, you know, you can order any of our programs for just $10 and add $5 shipping and handling. We'd be glad to send it to you. In fact, we have a catalog which shows a lot of our tapes and things. And, you know, every week I try to do a theme. You know, I don't just come on and just talk about any general subject. Some of you may think that I do, but I plan it. And I read that week just constantly and study that particular topic. And I pre-chosen every topic. I don't usually just show up and just speak on, you know, extemporaneous, whatever comes out of my mind. Again, some of you may think that I do that as well. But I try to study and I try to look for things that are very important to you today. They may be historical things. I remember we did a program on the double-headed eagle. You may say, well, what good is a double-headed eagle to me today? Well, you know, get that tape, that CD, and you'll find out. Today I want to talk about something. And by the way, let me mention the catalog. We do have a catalog of all of our products, including many of my best tapes from the archives and so forth, and CDs. And you can order that catalog if you'll send us a few dollars, or maybe $5 or $6, you know, just to, for the printing and the postage and everything. Some people have told me they order our catalog just to read the catalog, because that's got all those descriptions of various audio tapes and videos and all the books and other people's books. It's like a book in itself. And I think you'll enjoy the catalog. But if you can't afford $5 or $6 to send to us, we'll send you that catalog in return mail, and it'll have a list of my various audio tapes and CDs that you can order. Okay? Now, today we're going to talk about the serpent. The serpent. You know, the serpent, well, he's been around since the Garden of Eden, hasn't he? You remember that story, of course. Everybody has his little kids. I suppose now they don't teach people that. They think it's a myth. There are many things in the Bible that are allegories. Now, what is an allegory? An allegory is really a narrative or a story about something that seems to be made up or a fictional myth, but it has incredible significance to your human life and circumstance. It may be an allegory, but it may be real too. There are allegories that are real. There are things that God put in the Bible to instruct you that maybe happened, but he's got a larger purpose. You know, a good pastor will take one story or one example from the Bible and expand upon it. And he expands upon it, and you begin to learn that, you know, whatever happened to David or to Noah or Joshua or perhaps one of the apostles, you know, Peter or whatever, whatever happened to them also happens to you and me today. We have similar circumstances, things that occur to us. And God has used the Bible to give us allegories, and we can use those for instruction. I can't tell you how many times, you know, I've gone to the Bible and, you know, the story of Samson, for example. Well, he was strong, wouldn't he? But he fell victim to a woman, to Delilah. Delilah. You know, a lot of guys have fallen victim, haven't they? And of course, he lost his hair and he became weak. there may be, you know, there's something there. Well, maybe it really, did he really have the hairline? Is that a true story? Now, I believe that's true, but it's also an allegory. The hair relates, I wish I could get it. And, you know, I need to do a whole series of allegory sermons because it's so fascinating. And in Galatians 6, God talks about Abraham and Sarah and the slave girl Hagar and her son. And you discover that Hagar and her son are not the children of promise. They're not the children of the covenant. No, Hagar, the slave girl, wasn't. And Sarah convinced Abraham to cast them out into the wilderness. It seems so cruel, doesn't it? Was Sarah jealous? Well, what's the deal here? Poor Hagar, she was a wife too, you might say. I mean, she had a child. But God intended that that child not be a child of the promise. And didn't receive the covenant. The things that were promised to Abraham didn't go to Hagar and her child. Now, it seems that they did get some things God, you know, has provided for them, but they were cast out into the wilderness. Oh, how cruel that could be. And it's interesting that God says that is the story of Israel. Uh-oh. They don't teach that in churches today. They can't, because they say that Israel is going to be reborn again as a mighty nation. It's going to be the greatest nation on earth and all these things. And we've got to bless the Jews or we won't be blessed. And all of Israel today, and we've got to venerate and worship almost the Jews in Jerusalem and all that stuff. But Paul says Israel, a physical Israel, is Hagar and her son, the slave. They're in subjection. They're in captivity to Satan. Oh, again, I would have to say, uh-oh, as somebody surprised says. Oh, you mean Abraham and Sarah are not physical Israel? No, they're spiritual Israel. They have the promises. They give a picture of any race. Anywhere, anytime that belongs to Jesus. But Hagar and her son, no, they don't have the promise. They're cast out. Like physical Israel was cast out. Did you know that Jesus in Matthew, I believe it's 21 verse 53, you can back me up on that if I'm wrong. Write to me, would you? Every once in a while I'm wrong on a particular verse. But I know it was Matthew, I think it was chapter 21, where Jesus said to the Jews, and the physical Israel, notice I said physical Israel, the kingdom is taken from you and given to another nation that will bear the fruits thereof. Oh, they lost the kingdom. What is the kingdom? You mean in the future, the kingdom that's going to come? No. The kingdom's already here. Jesus says the kingdom is at hand. Wherever Jesus is the kingdom of God. That surprises a lot of Christians. They're waiting for the kingdom to come. You know, they pray the Lord's Prayer, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Yeah, well, that's right. You know, when when your kingdom comes, your will be done. No, Jesus wants it to come right now in you. And he is, as a Christian, he is shaping your life and you're becoming more and more like Jesus. And if you don't, well, I guess you're just retarded spiritually. Well, physically too, maybe. We all get a little retarded physically, but spiritually. You're conformed to be like Jesus. The more you become like Jesus, the more you realize you're in the kingdom. And you know, I've been around this ministry for many, many years, and I tell you, I'm no Superman. I guarantee you that. But you know, God has protected me. We've had people threaten us, and, you know, some congressman called up and he was so mad and he said, I'm going to be your worst nightmare. Some homosexual called and said, you know, how dare you say these about things about homosexuals? I'm on your street right now. I'm coming down and I guess he had a gun or something. He said, and I guess he was going to take care of us all, but he never showed up. came to the ministry one night, and there was something like written on the front porch. It was like the symbols. It was a witchcraft symbol. I guess the witches had heard about me and decided to come down and put a little spell on me. And so they had a little witchcraft ritual right there on my front door. I just walked right over it. Went right in and laughed about it. You know, you're protected by God. You're protected by God. And they try, they play. You know, I was in a radio show down in Miami, Florida, Juan and I, and they had me to debate some lady who was one of these psychic fortune teller types. She was very clever. And her boyfriend came with her, you know, and Juan and I were sitting there, and they were sitting on the other side. And, you know, so the host would ask me a question, ask her, and, you know, and he was sort of interesting. He was trying to be fair to both sides. But, of course, I won because I had Jesus on my side, and I just kept pointing back to God. But anyway, as I was talking to the girl, I noticed the guy, he had a medallion, a round circular medallion around his, I couldn't see what the image was on it, but it was around his neck, her boyfriend. And you know, the had it was lit up, you know, they had the lights in the studio, of course, and he had that and he was bringing it sort of up and down on his neck. And I was wondering what he was doing. And then I realized he was trying to get the light to shine into my eyes, to blind me with a light from his medallion, you know, reflecting his medallion and then go over to my eyes. And I looked at him and I smiled real big, you know, and he was, you know, sort of, he didn't know what to say, but that's what he was doing. He was looking and trying to, that sneaky look eye. And I just thought to myself, this is ridiculous. You know, even if I'm blind, I still have God's word. That's not going to help you, friend. But anyway, we're talking about the serpent today. I'm getting off track here. Now, listen, the serpent, the serpent starts very early. And Jesus said, this is in Luke chapter 10, verse 18. When his disciples all returned, actually it was the 70 disciples plus more. And he had sent them out to preach throughout the nation. And they went preaching and they were able to cast out devils and do healings and incredible miracles. When they came back, says the 70 returned again with joy, saying, Lord, even the devils are subject unto us through thy name. Now that's instructive, isn't it? The devils, said these 70 disciples, are subject unto us through thy name. It wasn't through their name, was it? When I come across devils, and I have many on a number of occasions, I always say in the name of Jesus, I rebuke you. I say, you know, I use the name of Jesus. I'm authorized to do that. I'm ordained. I'm commissioned. I'm licensed. Whatever you want to say. And I am because simply I'm a Christian. And you are too. And the devils are subject to you and I through the name of Jesus. I don't say I'm a great man. I'm a disciple and you get out of that man or you shut up or you leave here. I don't do that. You see, I know those devils are stronger than me. They're wiser than me. They're stronger. They're smarter. They've been around a long, long time. They can defeat me at the drop of a hat, but they cannot defeat Jesus. Ah, yes. I have the power of Jesus' name. What a name that is. And that's what you've got to use, you see. That's you just tell these devils, get away from me in the name of Jesus. And you know what? He's right there with you. And they're going to go. I promise you. So many people I've met and devil people, and they have such power. And I go up to them and I just look at them and they actually begin to get frightened. They see Jesus in me and they get frightened And remember, they know their fate and their destiny. It's bad. And they don't want to meet it too soon. They'd like to hang around a little bit more. And when you come up with Jesus, boy. But Jesus in verse 18, he says, and he said unto them, these are the 70, they were joyful. They had cast out devils in his name. And Jesus said, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. He told him, I was up there in heaven. When Satan rebelled, I was up there. I saw it. And Satan was cast out of the kingdom of God. And he fell like lightning to earth. Isn't that amazing? I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Wow. And then he said something interesting. He says, behold, verse 19, and you've got to take this into your heart, my friends. He says, behold, I give unto you power to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. Think about that. He has given you as his servant, as his disciple, as his follower. Jesus has given you power to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the powers of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. Now, I want to explain this to you. He's not talking about going to, you know, they have a big rattlesnake roundup here in Sweetwater, Texas every year. And the cowboys go out and try to get all these rattlers they can. They come, they have a big festival with them, and I don't know, they play them, taunt them, and they finally kill them and eat them, I think. Strange stuff. I don't know if they're delicious or not, but anyway, that's what they do with the rattlesnakes they get. Well, we got plenty of scorpions too. I see one from time to time in my house, you know, I used to kill about two or three a year, random times. And, you know, I visited a friend one time and boy, he had a scorpion on his couch, and I'd sit there and felt this thing going up my, you know, shoulder. And I was wondering what that was. You know, it came up to the collar of my shirt. And I didn't know what it was. And I had some feeling that I thought my collar had gotten, you know, sort of wrapped around wrong or something. I reached up to straighten my collar. When I did, well, the old scorpion stung me. The rascal. I went, ow. Then he turned around and stung me on the neck, too. Stung me twice. Boy, that hurt. It hurt for about 30 minutes. I'm telling you. I thought I was going to die for about 30 minutes, but it went away. Now, Jesus is not talking about scorpions and snakes that you see. I do recommend you avoid these rascals. I do. I don't think you ought to go out and, you know, he's not giving you power to tread over physical scorpions and snakes. Although we have the case of Paul, who went to the island of, I think it was Crete, and there on that island, they had a shipwreck, and he and the ship host were all on the coast there, and they made him a campfire, and I guess they were all cold and everything, and they made him a campfire. Their ship had just crashed, and then he reached to put a stick into the fire, and turned out to be a serpent, and it bit him. And it was a poisonous serpent. Boy. And they saw that. And I suppose the guys there, you know, the crewmen said, well, you're dead now. There's nothing we can do for you. And he just calmly just went and sat back down. And the next morning, he was just fine. And boy, that shocked them. How was it that serpent didn't kill him? Very dangerous serpent, turns out. Well, Jesus protected him. It wasn't his time to go. Now, listen, friends, don't tempt God. Don't say, I'm going to go out and get bitten by a serpent. It's not my time to go. It might be your time to go, so you might go. But it wasn't Paul's time to go. And he was bitten, and he lasted just fine. Now, the next verse is going to explain this to you. I love the Bible because in, you know, it'll give you something, you start scratching your head, but in the next verse it explains it. It says, now remember, these 70 disciples came to him and said, we're so happy the devils are subject unto us through thy name. And he said, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. He said, behold, I give to you all power to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. And then verse 20, it says, notwithstanding, in other words, regardless of this fact, rejoice not that the spirits are subject unto you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven. He's saying these scorpions and serpents I was telling you about that you're going to be treading on as Christians, they're spirits. That's what he's talking about. Spirits. He's not talking about real serpents and scorpions. He's talking about spirits, and that's what they are. See, the you know, in the New Age movement, I discover that many women are sexual perverts, and they actually, you can order a tape recording or a CD, and it's called Dream Recording. Yeah, you can order it. And in this recording, you actually invite spirits to come into your body and have sex with you. So women put it beside their bed and they play it on a little recorder and they go to sleep, and then supposedly it has some kind of music on it, but it supposedly invites spirits to come into your body and have sex with you. That's perverted. Will it really happen? Can a woman have sex with a spirit? Well, I would not put it past Satan. I wouldn't put it past him. I believe it does happen. And these women are perverting themselves and doing terrible things, and they're going to be in real trouble. So he says, I give unto you power to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy. Then he says, notwithstanding this, rejoice not that the spirits, that those are the spirits. See, God is giving you an example. I mean, you know, nobody likes scorpions and serpents. And if you do, I think something's wrong with you, my friends. Now, little boys do. They go around. They say, oh, I want to see what this serpent, this snake is like or whatever. I don't recommend that at all. I think you should stay away from serpents and scorpions. I can't stand them. I can't. I'll kill all of them. Well, don't kill that serpent. I mean, it's a good one. Yeah, no, it's a good one. Sure it is. It's dead. It's come, you know, near my house. Let me tell you. You know, I don't have to look and find out what kind of serpent it is. I just want to get out of there. Now, some people live with serpents. And oh, they're their pets and all that stuff. That's nonsense. I think those people are very weird and very perverted. I want you to understand that serpents and scorpions are evil creatures because they're spirits. And the serpent that God talks about in the Bible is the devil. That's the one that went to Eve, and then she convinced Adam to sin, to eat of the fruit of that tree that God told him, don't eat of that. And the serpent came. It wasn't a serpent on the ground. It was a spirit. Now, is Satan able to shape himself into some kind of a body like a human being? Perhaps. Perhaps he is. He incorporates, you know, himself into human beings, and he's able to possess human beings. I don't know what happened there, but I know that the serpent was a spirit. It was a demon, a devil. That's what it was. So I want you to understand that when we're talking about the serpent, we're talking about a spirit, the spirit of evil. And it's real, though. It may be an allegory, but it's real. Now, serpents have been around for a long time. In fact, ever since the world began, serpents have been worshipped as gods. They have been worshipped as gods. In every religion, it doesn't matter. You know, I've gone down to Mexico to the Aztec temples, you know, the pyramids. And I found these paintings, these incredible paintings of the Aztecs and the other peoples there, of serpent gods that they worshipped. Wow. At the same time, you can go and look at the mummies in the various museums of the world, the Egyptian mummies in Egypt, in all the pyramids, and you're going to see that they also worship serpents. And they had them on their headdresses, on their head. They had the serpent. Some years ago, I read about a temple in the United States in Nashville, Tennessee. It was a great temple built to Athena around the year 1900. Somewhere around there, very close to it. A gigantic temple. It was exactly like the temple of Athena in Athens, Greece. Now, Athena, who is Athena? Athena was the great goddess of Greece. Now, she was worshipped in many lands all over the world. In fact, the mother goddess, that's what they called her, she was worshipped in Egypt, in Syria, in Sumeria, throughout Europe, over in the Britain. You come to the Americas, she was worshipped. You go to the islands of the Caribbeans, you're going to find the mother goddess is worshipped. And everywhere you go, she always has her serpents who accompany her. You see, serpents are spirits that accompany demon-type deities or gods or goddesses. Well, they certainly did Athena. And I wasn't surprised when I went to visit Wanda went with me. And it was an exciting experience we had. It was unbelievable. It was in Centennial Park, pretty well downtown. And they had this beautiful Greek temple, big, you know, columns like they had in Rome and Greece. It looks like an ancient, you know, why would they build that in Nashville? Well, they had their reasons. They were occultists. They were Freemasons. And they built this great temple to Athena. Now, 1900 or so, when they built it, Athena's statue was not inside it. It was empty. They had the sanctuary there where you could go into and sit and worship Athena, but Athena wasn't there. Now, her image was carved on the huge bronze doors of the entrance. And as Juan and I walked along the little sidewalk there, big sidewalk, actually, in Centennial Park, we came to the great temple, and we looked up, and there weren't that many people because it had been raining very heavy that day. And I noticed that on the very front steps, this is like our Supreme Court building, it's a big, or National Capitol, it's a big, you know, structure. There was somebody who looked like he was a voodoo type of guy. He was a black man, and he had hair stringing out, you know, and all in braids. And he was doing a ceremony right on the front porch of the Temple of Athena. Wow. Well, we went on in, and they had a guard in there. He was, you know, they always have a guard at the front door. And he said, we're closed today because of the rain. And I told him, I said, well, I'm from Texas. I've come a long way. I sure would like to just poke my little nose in, if you don't mind. We won't disturb anybody or anything. And he looked at me, and he was a nice guy. He said, yeah, I'll let you in. Okay. Now, see, right, that's God's. God showed me, okay, there's this voodoo guy outside, and then there's this nice guard there with a police uniform on. He's going to let me in. So one and I went on in, and the guard explained to me. He took me in. He was a nice guy. And he said, we're actually doing some work in here now. The statue of Athena is being erected. Uh-oh. Really? It's been 100 years the city of Nashville has waited for Athena to rise. Oh? That's amazing. Well, I'll tell you more about Athena and about the serpents that surround her. And it's right in Nashville, Tennessee, when we return. I'm Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. I'll be right back. Hello, this is Tex Mars again. My book, Holy Serpent of the Jews. You know, it's over 200 pages, I suppose. Well, let's see. No, it's actually 224 pages. The subtitle of Holy Serpent of the Jews is this: The Rabbi's Secret Plan for Satan to Crush Their Enemies and Vault the Jews to Global Dominion. The Jews, the rabbis, have a secret plan. Now, not every Israeli knows about this. Not every Israeli has even any form of a god or deity. Many are atheists. Some are Buddhist. They say that Menachem Begin, who was once the prime minister of Israel, was actually, in secret, was a worshiping Buddhist. So you never know about Israel. But he claimed that God had given Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and so forth. He said God gave our forefathers, the forefathers to the Jews, he had given us this land. Well, what do you mean? God? What God? You worship Buddha, buddy. But anyway, that's sort of the Jews. But I do know this, that the rabbis that are in power today, they have the same religion as they had when Jesus was there. Oh, they worship the God of the Old Testament? No, no, no. Jesus said to the Jews, you have for your religion, this is the words of Jesus, you have for your religion the traditions of the elders. The elders of Zion, he was talking about. Well, does that have something to do with God? No, it doesn't. Their God, listen to me very carefully, friends, their God was and is the Holy Serpent. And Jesus knew it. He said to them, you serpents, you're like vipers, he said. And then he said to them, can you escape the damnation of hell? That's what he told them. Oh, they thought they were so smart, the Pharisees and the lawyers and all the others that had, they were so clever, and they had studied the Talmud and the Babylonian Kabbalah and all those things they had studied. But they forgot to study the Bible. Because the Bible is really just a fictional book and has no meaning for the Jews. And so they studied what their rabbis told them, which was the traditions. And the traditions taught them that there was a great serpent that was their God. And in this book, I tell you about that serpent. This is the only book in the entire world, as far as I know, in English at least, that explains the true religion of Judaism. I've never met a rabbi who challenged it. I've said many times that I, after this book came out this last year, that I would be glad to debate a rabbi. Maybe the chief rabbi of Israel would like to come down to Austin, Texas here, and I'll buy his dinner, and we'll go to some restaurant, and I'll give him a nice dinner, and then we'll go on TV, and we'll debate this. But nobody's ever showed up, and they won't, because they don't want you to know who their companion, their angel of help, they call him, their great master, the one they worship and venerate, is the Holy Serpent of the Jews. It's the first book like this. Now, you know, it's interesting, too. No one has rushed to the bookstore to buy it. No one. No pastor has written me. I expected that, well, I've got a few, I guess, from pastors that agree with me. But the others say, oh, this can't be true. I'm not going to read that book. They need to understand I've written dozens and dozens of books. I've written number one best-selling books. I only put out academically true books. True books. Because there are rabbi after rabbi is quoted in this book. I mean, one rabbi says we Jews are in the belly of the serpent. They're in the belly of the serpent. Another says that the serpent, the holy serpent, is our friend, our angel of help. Now, these rabbis are the chief rabbis today. They're not little guys. They're the big wigs. And that's what they say. And I quote them. And they never realize that an English-speaking researcher like Tex Mars would expose them. Oh, they say it in their synagogues and they're behind, you know, their robes and the doors closed to Christians. And you know, their Talmud says that if they teach a Gentile their Talmud, they're worthy of death. Ooh, that's why they don't do it. They say, yeah, we believe in God, but what God? I remember here in Austin, Texas, there used to be a woman named Elizabeth Prophet. I think she just made up that name. She had a big church, and on the altar behind her was a statue of Buddha. And behind the altar was a picture of an ancient, I don't know, looked like it was from, you know, the year 200 or 300 AD or something. And it was some man with a beard, and I wanted to know who that was. Well, come to find out it was Saint Germain, an ascended master spirit. And he was speaking through her. And then on the other side of the auditorium, she had a picture of Jesus. And she would say, today, this is Elizabeth Prophet, today Jesus is with us. He has come with his friend Saint Germain. And Buddha is watching us today. He is with us. What a bunch of malarkey that was. And these people were in the audience. They had about 1,000 there. They believed in this gal. And they really thought these spirits were, even the spirit of Jesus was speaking through her. What a bunch of nonsense. I laughed. You see, I don't get mad at that very much. I used to get sort of angry. People who blaspheme Jesus, but I just thought, well, she's going to get hers. I understand she's passed away now, Elizabeth Prophet. She probably has got her reward. Oh, yeah, she's got her reward. I believe that she worshiped the Holy Serpent, too, but I can't prove it because I never really researched her. I think her church was called the Church Universal and Triumphant. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. But I have researched the Jews. Because you see, the Jews, many Christians worship the Jews. They believe that they should do that. And they believe if they bless the Jews, then God will bless them. Well, I don't think you should bless anyone who worships the serpent, do you, friends? Do you think if you bless a person who worships the serpent, that God will bless you? He'll make you rich. He'll give you all kind, you know, a Cadillac or a Lexus or do you think that's true? I don't. I believe you should bless everyone. And you know the best way to bless people? Tell them about Jesus. And it doesn't matter whether they're Mexican or German or American or Caribbean or, you know, Cuban. It doesn't matter. That's the best way to bless them. You want to bless a Jew? Tell them about Jesus. Of course, they get a little angry, but that's okay. It's, you know... Last week I told you about Jonathan Edwards, the famous preacher back in, I think it was about 1700, I don't remember the days, but way back in time here in America. Jonathan Edwards sent out young men, you know, to preach from his church. He loved these young preacher men, preacher boys, he called them. And he had sent them out, you know, train them and send them out to preach. And one came back one time and he was looking so sad. And Jonathan Edwards, Pastor Jonathan Edwards says, well, did you preach at that church I sent you to? Yes, sir, I did, he said. Well, did anybody get saved while you were there preaching? And the young preacher boy said, no, sir, not a one got saved. Well, Jonathan looked at him right in the eyes and said, well, did anybody get mad? See, if somebody gets mad, they're on their way to salvation. I've always noticed that. I had a lady here, and I was on a radio program with her in Austin, Texas. She was from San Antonio. She and her boss came down, and they had a big psychological clinic there. They were a psychologist, and she called it a Christian clinic. But I asked her, do you introduce people to Jesus? Do you help them know Jesus? She said, no, we don't do that. We don't get involved in religion. I said, well, wait, you call your Christian counseling service and you don't get involved in preaching? Well, no, you know, we just talk to them about, you know, blah, 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 blah. This was a Christian show I was on. So I said, well, what are you doing on this Christian show with me? You know, this, you're not a Christian psychologist. Why do you call yourself that? You should be ashamed. Boy, she was mad. They hurried out of that studio. And about 4 months later, I heard from her. Opened the envelope, and there was, you know, her. She said, "Dear Mr. Mars, I want to apologize to you for leaving that studio. I was so angry at you at what you told us. But it made me think. And I would lay in bed at night thinking, I'm not doing this as a Christian. I'm not being a good Christian. I have now left that counseling clinic, and I am serving the Lord. I'm still a psychologist, but now I bring the Bible in and Jesus. And I wanted you to know that you were absolutely right." Well, that just pleased my heart. That just thrilled me. Some people said, "Well, you were really rude to her, Tex." Well, I straightened her out. That's all. I had to. She was misleading people. You can't straighten people's personal lives out that are all psychologically messed up without telling them about God. You just can't do it. Well, anyway, our book, Holy Serpent of the Jews, it is so necessary today because I want to help the Jews. I do. I want to help them. I want to help learn that don't worship that serpent. That's crazy. Worship Jesus. That's the message of my book. And you can help them too by getting this book. Help your pastor. Help him to learn about Judaism. You're going to ask your pastor, "Do you know about Judaism, the religion?" "Yeah, I know about it." No, he doesn't. He doesn't. I promise you. He doesn't know about it. He doesn't know what the real religion of Judaism is. And just tell him, "I know this old man in Austin, Texas named Tex Mars. And he's studied it for about 30 or 40 years. And he's written a book about it. Give him my book. It'll change maybe his life. It could change a lot of people's life." Now, this book is just $20. Add $5 shipping and handling, a total of $25. You can get it by writing to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Or you can go to our website, powerofprophecy.com. powerofprophecy.com, or you can go to the website called texmars.com. Okay? And it'll be right there. I think there's a picture on the webpage of this book. You can use your PayPal or your charge card or whatever to order it. Or you can phone us. See, we have three ways. You can phone us too, toll free. Absolutely no charge to you. 1-800-234-9673. And when you order, we will automatically send to you free a subscription to our newsletter called Power of Prophecy. I think you'll really enjoy it. This month, we actually have an article entitled Atomic Bomb Secrets. Man, that's powerful. Atomic Bomb Secrets. Ah, yes, there's secrets of the atomic bomb. Wow. Okay, let's return now to our regular program. We're talking about serpents. And I was telling you about Athena in Nashville. And the guard took Wanda and I in. It had been a rainy day. Nobody was out there at Centennial Park, this gigantic structure. And he told me, by the way, they had a bookstore in there. And I went, I bought several books. And I discovered that it was built to the scale of the Temple of Athena in Athens, Greece. Within 1/8 of an inch, it was built to the detail. So we have the Temple of Athena in the United States. Now, by the way, that's the city, you know, where the Southern Baptist Convention is, Nashville, Tennessee. And I thought that they would know all about Athena, the great goddess statue. Now, I found out that it was 42 feet tall. That's big. 42 feet tall. 4 + 2 = 6. A gigantic statue towering in that sanctuary. Let me just digress for a moment to tell you that I went back to my hotel room and I phoned up the Southern Baptist Convention. And nobody seemed to be in that day, but I talked to a nice lady. She was one of the officials there. And I said, "What about that statue of Athena here in Nashville?" "What statue?" I said, "You know, the great big, I mean, this is a gigantic, you got a whole temple to her, built to her." "Oh, we don't know anything about that." "You don't? You're the Southern Baptist Convention, the largest denomination in America. You don't know anything about the Temple of Athena? I mean, the Temple of Athena was worshipped during the time of Jesus Christ. In fact, she also existed under the name Diana, goddess of the Ephesians. I mean, she was called Venus by the Romans. She had many names. ISIS, of course. They even call ISIS today, don't they? The terrorist group. That's one of her names. And I said, you don't know anything about her, no. Do you know anything about Diana? I've never heard of Diana. I said, well, you ever read the book of Acts where Paul talks about the people there that wanted to kill Paul because he was taking them away from the goddess Diana? All the silversmiths had been made all these mementos of her and were selling them, and they had this big statue of her, and I've never heard of that. Boy, you know, these people, they don't read their Bibles. It's in the book of Acts, Diana. And Paul said she was the goddess whom all the world worships. Man, think about that. The whole world worshiped her. Well, there I was in Nashville. There was her statue, 42 foot tall. And it was behind it, this gauzy stuff, this gauze type cloth hiding the statue. You know how an artist, he doesn't really unveil the statue till the grand opening. They had not had the grand opening. Nobody could see that statue. But this is an amazing story. The police guard took me and Wanda back. And then he went behind the gauze. I couldn't see the statue, you see. But I knew it was there because he told me there's a statue there. And the artist was there with about five or six of his assistants. I didn't know even the sculptor, you know. I didn't know that they had all these assistants helping them. And they were there carving and working on that statue. And it was ready to go. I mean, it was ready to unveil, as I determined. But he went back, talked to the guy, and he said, you know, I guess he told him, you know, these people are from Texas. And by the way, I also told him, I put out a newsletter called Power of Prophecy. And I would love to talk about that statue in my newsletter. And I thought maybe that would get the artist, you know. The sculptor was there that day working with all of his assistants on the statue. And the next thing I knew, he came out from all the linen and everything and motioned for me to come forward. And I went up there, and Juan and I, we beheld. He brought us under the gauze, and there we were, face to face with this fantastic statue. And the first thing I noticed was in her hand was a serpent. A huge serpent was in her hand. And on the ground below her were other serpents. Oh my. There was the great Athena with her crown, queen of the universe, I suppose. I found out later that Athena came from the mind, supposedly, direct from the brain or the mind of Zeus, the father of the gods of Athens, Greece. Then when I visited, by the way, later on the United Nations in New York, I went inside, and right there, when you go inside the United Nations building, there's a statue. It's of Zeus. No, you won't find a statue of Jesus. You won't find one of Paul. You won't find one of Moses, but you will find a statue of Zeus, the father of the gods. He was the devil as far as I was concerned, but there he is in New York at the United Nations. Representing all the nations of the world, Zeus, our great God. Amazing. But now Nashville, there it was. In Nashville, Athena. They told me they had waited 100 years to build it for some strange reason. The people had been waiting and waiting, and finally it was time. Boy. You see, our lifetime, they feel like this is the 21st century. This is going to be when their Antichrist comes. And they're going to have the fulfillment. They're going to bring back all the old religions. So anyway, I talked to the artist. His name was Alan LeQuire. I said, Mr. LeQuire, this is an incredible situation here. He said, yes. I said, well, tell me, who wants a statue like this? What is its purpose? And he looked at me and he said very sincerely, many people will worship it, he said. I said, really? Oh, yes, he said. There are many in the environmental movement and in the goddess movement among the feminists who will come and worship this statue of Athena. And of course, the serpents who accompany her. And then I remembered I had read about the gods of ancient Greece and how if you go in some of the temples, they literally had serpents inside and they would be crawling about. There you were, and there they were, these serpents. And they would put out bread, loaves of bread, as offerings to the gods or goddesses. And the serpents would glide over the bread. And the people thought that the bread was being blessed, and they would take the loaves and eat of the loaves that had been blessed by the serpents. Now, I want you to understand, again, those serpents represent spirits. And I was told that each of the serpents represented various planets in the sky. Oh, yes, they're into astrology too, you see. Anyway, Mr. LaCroix was a very interesting man, and he told me all about the environmentalist and so forth. And then he said, we're going to have our grand opening just next month. You're being allowed to see this incredible statue. This is sort of special, he said. They were going to close up this monument today, and we were the only ones working in here. And I thought the door was closed, but you and your wife got in somehow. I said, well, the door was open. We just walked in. He said, well, I'm glad you did. And he was very nice to me. And I did write about it in my newsletter. It was a feature article. And then I wrote about it in my book, Mysterious Monuments. Athena, there were their serpents, her companions, her angels of help. Now, let me tell you about another story. These are true. I was in Silicon Valley. I went there to speak at a conspiracy group. And while we were there, we drove over to San Jose, California. Pretty big city in California. I'm not a big fan of California, you know. They say many people in California now want to leave the United States. You know, all the actors and actresses and all that. And they're welcome to go. I've been hoping they'd fly off to Canada any day now, but they still haven't left. They're angry, you know, about Trump being president. You know, Ashley Judd and Madonna and all those wackos and weirdos. But anyway, I went to San Jose and we were driving around, and I was looking for one particular thing. You see, in San Jose, it seems that the city council and the mayor, they've forgotten all about Jesus Christ. And they wanted to build a statue to worship the god of Mexico, of the Aztecs. Now think about that. Now I want you to tell you that they chose city land and they built this statue to the god of the Aztecs, and they built it on city land. The government of the city of San Jose. Now, of course, if it had been a statue of some Christian figure, they would have taken it down instantly. You know, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, or that crazy judge up in Seattle that ruled against Trump, they said, you can't have a Christian statue on government land. But it was okay to have this Aztec god. And guess what it was, friends? It was nothing less than a big statue of a rattlesnake. And it had a little bronze, you know, engraving on it. And it says, this is a statue of, I think it was Quetzalcoatl, the plumed feather serpent god of, you know, the Aztecs. Something like that on the side of it. I can't even remember now. I think I took a picture. I'll probably put it in some book in the future. I don't know. But here it was. It was pretty big. And cars were passing around it. So there they were, worshiping or venerating or at least recognizing the god of San Jose. So you want to know about the god of San Jose? It's a big rattlesnake god. And you think, well, Jesus doesn't mind that. Surely there are Christians in San Jose. But I asked around there, I said, did anybody complain about this? They said, no. Did anybody go to the San Jose City Council and say, we don't want this statue in our city? No. There are no Christians that complained? No. But wait, I've gone and driven around. I see these big churches, Baptist, Methodist, Presbyterian, everywhere. None of them care about the rattlesnake god? Well, no. Oh, my, my, my. America is a perverted nation. And we now allow these demon gods, they represent demons and demon spirits, down in Nashville, Tennessee, over in San Jose, California. But wait, I'm not finished yet. I went to George Washington National Monument. It's actually the National Masonic Monument. The George Washington National Masonic Monument. Sort of tongue twister there. A huge building in Georgetown, out of Washington, D.C., near Georgetown. Big building. And the Freemasons are very proud that they built this building. And I saw all their symbols and everything, and I went inside, and there was a huge statue, I don't know, 30 or 40 foot tall, to George Washington. And there were murals painted on the wall, and I noticed one mural. This is the George Washington National Masonic Monument. And I noticed, and they had a little sign there that said what that was. It was a painting by a famous painter. It was huge. Took up the whole wall, this mural. And the painting said, this is a scene from the church in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, right after the Declaration of Independence, and back in 1776 or 7 or something, you know. And there they were. And, you know, the pastor was there, and he was famous. And there was, Benjamin Franklin and, you know, James Monroe and Thomas Jefferson. No, not Thomas Jefferson, but the other. All the characters that you've ever read about in American history that were Freemasons and presidents. There they were in the church. A nice church scene. Pastor was up preaching. But there, I looked again and again, and I took a picture of it. I couldn't believe it. There inside the church, this is a picture of the church back in the days of George Washington. By the way, he was there in the picture. There was a chair that looked down on everybody. It was just one chair. It did not have, the other chairs all had people, but this one didn't have people. There was a serpent. A serpent. A serpent was attending. A serpent was observing. A serpent was guiding. They're saying that the serpent guided our destiny. Our nation is framed around the observations of the serpent. The serpent looked down upon us and our founding fathers. That's a flat out horror. There it was. And they said, told me that 1 million people a year at least visit the George Washington National Masonic Monument. And I asked the man there, I saw a serpent up there. And he smiled, the mason that worked there. I said, does anybody complain about the serpent in that picture, that painting? No, you're the first. I'm the first man out of millions to go there. Millions. I'm the first to complain about the serpent. Friends, listen. Avoid the serpents in your life. Avoid the demon spirits. Stay close to God. Religions, Judaism, all of these religions, back all the way back to the Aztecs, the Toltecs, the Mayans, all of them worship the serpent. They still do. Yes, they do. The Druids, they worship the serpent. But Christianity, no. It tells us about the serpent. He's that old dragon. That's right. He's the old dragon, the old devil. That's in the book of Revelation, the serpent. And his destination, I want you to know, if you worship the serpent, if you honor him, you will go where he's going, which the Bible says is the lake of fire. That's his destiny. That's where the serpent is going. As for you and I, friends, we worship Jesus Christ. We're free. Jesus said in his very first sermon that he gave to the synagogue, he got up and he said, I am setting the captives free. Wow. I'm free of the serpent, of all of his people, because I know Jesus Christ. And I hope you are too. And if you're not, you can be. This is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy. We're right here in Austin, Texas. And my prayer is that you'll tune in each week during this same time and discover the power of prophecy.